Meditation.
Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I just feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Thanks for listening. And today on the podcast, making her podcast debut, Philomena Leonardi is going to talk to us about the holidays. Look, maybe the holidays are smooth sailing. You anticipate no problems. You're going to see your family, and there's no problems there, no friction. Everyone gets along. Everyone agrees politically. Maybe the year you've had has been perfect, and so the holidays aren't going to bring up anything particularly traumatic for you. So, you know, maybe you're that type of person. But maybe you're not. Maybe the holidays are a stressful time for you. And maybe, just maybe, you're not looking forward to the next little period. Or maybe you're somewhere in between. Today's podcast is about surviving the holidays, bringing a sense of mindfulness to the holiday experience. And what does that mean? What does that look like? And why is it so hard? Visit our website, ny.shambhala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. January, if you're looking beyond the holidays, the weekend of January 19th is Shambhala Training Weekend 1, our introductory weekend meditation intensive. It's being taught by Shastri Ethan Nickturn and David Nickturn, sort of a tag team, father-son, crime-fighting, teaching duo. So if you've been listening for a while, if you've been interested in deepening your meditation practice, this is a great opportunity to dive in the weekend of January 19th. For more information and to register, click the link on the homepage next to Shambhala Training Weekend 1. And now, here is Philomena.
For many of us, this is not only a busy time, but it's also often a time that brings up a lot of interesting stuff. Maybe some of us are looking forward to being close with family and friends, and maybe some of us may not be in the same kind of easy relationship with family and friends. Some of us may not have access to our families, and some of us may have new situations that are arising that we need to deal with. So life is messy. And this time of the year is speedier, and it highlights some of the messiness that we all live with. And then at the same time, I think I might have gone to 3 or 4 different websites for different reasons in the last couple of weeks, and they're all about the perfect holiday outfit or the perfect holiday dinner. And you see these beautiful images of wonderfully laid tables with sparkling china, small children with impossibly cute outfits that are clean. And, you know, it's really hard to live up to those sorts of expectations. Both the ones that we set for ourselves, but also the ones that we constantly get messages about. So when we have this gap between what's going on and our expectations, we tend to fill that gap with a lot of thinking, a lot of shoulds and woulds, and just a lot of habits that take us away from what's happening right now. So, as I said earlier, the irony is that at the same time, whilst we are trying to fill these gaps with more doing and more having, actually what we are all yearning for is to connect with others and to do so in a genuine way. So mindfulness practice is an interesting crucible, is an interesting it's something that we can work with at a time of increased stress and increased discursiveness and speediness in our lives. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some aspects of mindfulness and how they relate to what's happening at this point in time in our calendars called the holidays. Although, of course, it's actually true for any time of the year. It just so happens that this is a particularly heightened time for a lot of us. So mindfulness is first and foremost about gentleness. It's actually the practice of mindfulness and the practice of meditation is about creating a space where we can see things for what they are with some gentleness. And at the same time with attention. And without judgment. So when we do practice and we are watching our breath or we are staying with our breath, we start noticing what's happening with our minds. And some of us may notice that there are a lot of thoughts, a lot of discursiveness, what I call the washing machine mind. Goes around, around, around. There could be the chattering mind, but whatever you call it, there is a lot of noise going on, and there is a tendency for us to perhaps want to be quite aggressive towards ourselves, to try and stop that. Mindfulness is actually about the gentleness and the kindness to ourselves to notice what is going on. And to notice that with some precision as well. So every time you come back to the breath because you've noticed that your mind has wandered off, you bring more and more precision to this noticing without judgment. And hopefully over time with a little bit of curiosity and humor as well. So as we continue to do that, one thing also that we notice, which is part of how we tend to live our lives and becomes, again, more heightened at times like the holidays, is that we typically don't really like to stay with things that are not very comfortable. And this is what then makes us want to distract ourselves and want to perhaps just get very busy and speedy. And during a time like this, we tend to perhaps overcommit ourselves. We may tend to be perhaps less patient. So it can manifest in many different ways. But I think that probably the most interesting is that at a time when perhaps a lot of different feelings may be coming up because we all have different circumstances, we tend to be reluctant to stay with what is actually occurring. And when we do that, we tend to react in particular ways. So we might, when we get angry about a situation or we get frustrated, it's often about something else. But that something else is something that we may not necessarily want to be really noticing. So mindfulness is about having the gentleness and the space to notice what is going on in the weather of our minds. And so at a time when things are particularly fretful, we can use that as a helpful method. So actually the time when probably we have least time to sit is probably when we need it most. And the other interesting thing is that mindfulness doesn't have to be that sort of heavy trip of, well, I'm going to sit and meditate. It could be that you're just walking down the street and you just notice what's around you. You might notice whatever little nature there is in New York City. I mean, I always think it's amazing there are squirrels in parks, running around being squirrely, or the sparkling element of decorations and holidays. I mean, there's a lot of beauty at the same time that can be noticed. So mindfulness can also be opening up to what is around us. So when we can do that, even if it's a little sitting, even if it's a little noticing, coming back to what's there right now, coming back to the breath, we are creating the possibility to relate to things that are happening around us without reacting as much. And at a time when we are also having a lot of interactions with other people in very particular ways that are typical of this time of the year, whether it's be family and friends or office situations, or if you have a job that gets particularly busy at this time of the year. I don't know about you, but I seem to have every project that is out there needs to get done before the end of the year. I don't know what it is about this mythical end of the year date that everybody feels they have to get everything done by then. And it's, so we all have other people also that we need to interact, and in a way, we can also consider how to extend our mindfulness to others. And I don't mean so much extending our mindfulness to others as just an act of, well, you know, I'm going to be nice to you, which is helpful, but not really going to necessarily give them the gift of your presence that you could aspire to extend. It's more the sense of that as you get to understand more about what is your own pattern of thoughts, and you're able to create some space, you also start seeing that other people have their own similar stories or their own version of other stories, and we can perhaps relate to them in that way as opposed to relate to them as, well, they're doing that to me. There is a church on Madison Avenue in the 30s. It's a Baptist church. I've never been inside this church, but they have this wonderful signage outside that changes every week. And there was this wonderful saying several months ago. It went something like this. Upon finding the center of the universe, some people may be disappointed to realize that it's not them. So mindfulness is a little bit about realizing that as we uncover the patterns of our thoughts and we notice that others around us are in an interrelationship with us. And when we interact with them, we can start also noticing a little bit more about what is actually going on between us and with and for them. And we can ask different kind of questions when we interact or have different kind of interactions altogether. So how many of us find that the holidays is a time when we all somehow revert into particular roles that we may have had for, you know, all our lives with around our families, around particular rituals and habits that exist in our own holiday patterns. And it's like immediately you're back to being 12. Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable how that happens. So part of being mindful is also being present to some of those exchanges and being able to realize that they may be maybe able to stay with what it is that is actually occurring and what is painful for us or what is triggering us and not react in the same way. When we do that, we might also find that it's not just relationships with people that we have ongoing interactions, whether it's work or family and friends, but we also find that when we're able to be mindful and present, even interactions with people that are more perhaps peripheral to our lives, or we may think are peripheral, can actually create a connection at a particular point in time. And it can really create a whole other sense of interrelationship and how we can, in a way, raise the quotient of well-being around us at this time of the year. So, you know, if you're going to Starbucks and you just simply go up to the counter asking for your double tall skim cappuccino, no froth, extra milk, and you just simply kind of ignore the person who is making you that drink or taking your order, it's actually a lost opportunity for mindfulness. Because if in that moment you can just make that eye contact and have the briefest of exchanges, you will find that both of you will be uplifted by that significantly, and it will have a ripple effect. So that is possible when the chatter in our minds is somewhat turned down a little, occasionally, enough for us to notice those moments of opportunity. So that instead of going to the airline counter and thumping because your flight is delayed 3 hours, painful as that is, that person on the other side of the counter is actually suffering also. And we sometimes forget that. It goes back to what is at the center of the universe. So mindfulness during this time of the year is not about fixing the holidays and actually giving you the catalog holidays that you get pictures in your mailbox every week now. That's really not going to happen, not even here, not even if you meditate every day. But there is the opportunity to relate to what is going on around us in a way that is a little bit more sane and in a way that is also much more about what is happening right now in the moment. And let go, to some extent, as much as we can from time to time, of some of the cardboard cutout connections that we make. What I mean by that is we can be, our thinking can create a lot of assumptions and a lot of expectations around ourselves and other people, such that we cease to see other people as they are right now, and we miss the opportunity to connect with them in a way that is relevant to what's happening right now. And those sorts of habitual thinking situations are what tend to stoke the fires of the kind of stuff that we all dread when we go to the holiday gatherings. So it's not about creating the perfect holiday, but it's about relating to things as they are and not have the constant liking, disliking, craving, aversion, thinking around what's happening so that you cease to have that direct experience. So let me stop here and I'd like to hear some of your comments or questions relative to what might be happening in how you see this as being applicable in your context.
I have just a very general question about meditation. You're breathing the outside in, and then you're going into yourself, and then when you're exhaling, you're basically breathing yourself out into that outer space. But it's coming from a sense of the focus is your, like your inner self, where your, you could say your spirit or soul is. And I was just, in a simple thing about breathing,
mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you just have any comments about that.
So, in the meditation technique that we've been practicing here, the breath is the what we call the object of meditation, and it is simply the reference point to which we come back to, so that we can remain present in what's on the cushion right now, as opposed to thinking about the past, the future, planning the next holiday, etc. So there is any other discursiveness, even if it's about the breath, is more thinking. And so we simply let that go. So the breath is simply used as the object of meditation because it's there. It's easily accessible. We can always find it and come back to it. And it's a very natural part of our being alive.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
You talked about being nice to someone as not necessarily having the most mindful, you could say you want to have mindfulness with someone, and that could be through being kind to them, but you also sort of said, or at least I understood you saying, that it might not always mean just kindness. I was just wondering if you could talk more about that.
Yeah.
How you could have a difficult kind of interaction with someone, but that's actually much more real than just being nice to them.
So kindness, meaning courtesy, it's very valuable, it's very important. And the distinction I was making earlier was that what we are talking about with mindfulness is not only the exterior behavior of kindness, which is very important, but it's also this notion that we are really available. That when you are making a connection with another person, there is that contact, there is that interaction that comes from, I'm here, you're here, and we're not dismissing each other at a level, but also we're not seeing each other through the lens of a lot of assumptions and preconceived ideas. A lot of relationships, a lot of interactions tend to be based on that. You know, whether somebody we see them as important or not important, or they've done this to us 5 years ago, therefore that defines the relationship, or whatever it might be. So it was addressing that notion of the connection coming through a perspective of being present and available.
So what do you do, like, if you're going to have a sad holiday? You know, you just feel sad,
mm-hmm.
and then just wait for some other feeling to come up and then feel that one too? Or, like, you know, for a long list of reasons, I'm not going home, and then there's Christmas, so it's Thanksgiving. I won't bore you with it, but I feel that Thanksgiving is going to be sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, like, people want to go to the parade, and I don't really want to. I just think I'm going to stay home and feel sad. And, like, I think, isn't our culture say that's wrong and you should go out with your friends to the parade and then go have champagne and then make a big deal out of something, but I really don't have the spirit inside of me. But then again, I would say it seems unhealthy behavior to stay home. So then maybe halfway through the day you're like, this was stupid. I should have gone to the parade and then gone to dinner with my friends. What should I do?
Well, I wouldn't presume to tell you what to do.
But I'm asking.
So from the perspective of what we've been talking about here, what we're saying is that mindfulness is about relating to what is. And relating to what is may mean that it is a difficult and sad time. It is, I mean, without going into the details of circumstances, but generally we all have times that are going to be sad and difficult, and it may even be that for some of us the holidays always signify something sad and difficult for whatever reason. So the question is not so much what do you do, meaning, do I go to the parade and out with my friends or not? The question is, at some point, can you simply be with whatever is arising? And if you decide to go out, can you not necessarily suppress it, but also not, also at the same time, it's not building a story around it? So the challenge with this process, with this notion of, you know, when you're breathing, the thoughts arise and come back to the breath, the analog here is there are difficult emotions or difficult feelings, and can you have some space and some gentleness to stay with them without the storyline. And that can then potentially, you know, then whatever you resolve to do, whether it's to go out or not, is from the space of knowing what is. And if it is appropriate to go out, that's fine. And if it isn't, that's also fine. But it's not around building a storyline about what I should do and go because of that. It's more about if you go out, it's a case of it. I can have both. I can be with both. The feeling of being interacting with others as well as there is sadness. So it's the wanting to fix it is that creates the challenge.
Seeing it as a problem to be solved rather than an experience to be felt.
Yes. And it doesn't mean that there may not be actions that follow that are constructive and help. So if you call that solution, it's not that you don't do anything. But it's when we try and fix something because we're not willing, from the perspective of wanting to push it away, then we miss that opportunity to befriend ourselves and understand what's going on.
Thank you.
I was thinking about what you said about the Starbucks, and I remembered that this week there was a guy working on some plants on the floor. He was doing something, and I was just looking at my phone, and I hit something that he was working with. And he got really mad, and he yelled at me, "Como, be careful!" And I just, I sat down with him, and I looked at him, and I told him, "How can I help? I ruined this. How can I help you?" And he was like, "Well, for starters, you should not look at your phone when you walk." And I was like, "You're completely right." Mm-hmm. And just like being, and then his attitude changed completely. He laughed, and I was like, "How?" Being present with someone, even if it's someone that's mad at you, and being there for him, can just that change the whole situation. You know, I'm sure if I just walked away, he would have stayed there yelling. But he wasn't expecting that I stopped and I looked at his eyes and tell him, "You're right. I shouldn't be looking at my phone." And that changed the whole thing. Just being present with what was happening. Mm.
Thank you. That's a great story. Yeah. Also because it points out to the fact that that's sometimes part of the challenge. It's the difficulty in being able to recognize. It's uncomfortable to recognize, yeah, I shouldn't have been looking at my phone. Yeah. I'm just curious about if any of you have any examples or any situations where you see that it would be useful to bring this kind of attention or gentleness to a situation, not to share necessarily anything that's too detailed or private, but just I'm curious whether how you're relating to some of these ideas and their application. Yeah.
Before you asked that, I was going to ask a question, and maybe the question will follow answering what you just asked us. Recently, having a really difficult time with just life. There are specifics of it, but I don't need to get into it. And you know, meditating quite a lot as a way of sort of coping and as a way to bring some sort of gentleness to how I'm dealing with what's been going on. I guess my question was, do you feel that meditation can be enough to be something that can help you through things? Say if we're talking about the example that you're using, which is like a holiday, you know, if you are practicing meditation, do you feel like, I mean, I guess if you're enlightened, yeah, it's enough. But like, if you're not, like, do you feel that it's the kind of thing where you should just keep trying to meditate, keep working at it, keep doing this thing, or is there a kind of a point at which maybe you say, okay, you know what, I need to look at other things along with meditation to make sure that I'm having my needs met. For example, with the woman who just spoke, maybe socializing is something that might help some aspect of, you know, something that needs, some need that needs to be met as well. So yeah, I guess my question is, do you feel like if you don't know what to do, you should just keep meditating?
So let's see, yes or no. I think it would be foolish to say that anything can be as simple as just do this and things will be transformed. Take two in the morning and with meals, whatever. It's not like that. I would say, though, that what we're talking about here is undoing, in a way, unlearning, unpicking what may have been many, many years, a long time of reacting to things in a certain way. And those habitual patterns, as we call them, are formed in a way that we are not even aware. It's like it's one thought builds on another thought, builds on another thought, and before you know, there is an emotional charge around that, and before you know, that becomes a storyline, that becomes the lens through which one could be related to a particular set of circumstances or situation, and it's seen as truth, as in, it's the way it is, isn't it? Kind of thinking. And to undo that, to unpick that, takes a level of patience and a level of effort, if I can call it that, which we formalize through meditation practice. And whilst it can be transformative, it'll be something that will still require a level of intention and effort and discipline in doing it. So that's why the answer is yes or no, because it requires that sort of foundation or that sort of keeping at it. And at the same time, you know, when something clicks, that can be very immediate. And you go, oh, yeah, I can now see the situation in a very different way. But it's really tilling the soil, in a way. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah.
May not be the answer you wanted, but...
The question was a little bit weird to begin with because, of course, it's not like it's a response. I mean, it can be a way of therapy or something like that to like solve some sort of problem. But meditation is a practice, like you said.
Yeah, and by the way, that's exactly right. It's not to say that there aren't other important pieces that come into it. Absolutely, I would not. No one here actually would ever say that. I mean, there are some very specific situations where that require different kind of intervention at particular times. And actually, you know, for instance, situations if there are situations of addiction, a person would need very different kind of support as well. So this is not to say, as I said before, take 2 in the morning with meals and things will be fixed. It is a long-term, it is a commitment to relate to one's life and get to know one's mind in a certain way. And along that path, there may also be the clear need for other things. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
This gets back to the question you asked us before. When you said that, I was thinking that when it comes to the holidays and I guess most of the people that I associate with are people that I probably met, we'll call them in like my formative years, you know, not as a young child, and then there is my immediate family. And I would say that for immediate family, there is no practice that works for me. It's just simply get through it, survive, and leave. That's it. For people who I've met, you know, different times of my life, who I have difficult time with, there is a practice I can use with them, but not with immediate family. I don't think there's any. I think that there's no practice for that except for just get through it, and that's it. Yeah.
It looks like we have a lot of people who just want to get through it. Yeah. Well, you know, I have some very good news for you. You don't actually have to use the practice on anybody. That's the good news, other than with yourself. And if practice means that you survive those situations with your immediate family in a way that is more gentle, more graceful, with a little bit more humor, without raising your own sense of aggression or anxiety towards yourself, then that's pretty good, actually. I would sign up for that. So this is not about... So I'll share a personal story, if I could take 2 seconds of your time. I have a mother, and every daughter has a certain kind of relationship with their mother, I would say, or most of us. And there are things that my mother does, I can tell you, it's like this dance that's going on. Every year when I go home for the holidays. And the thing is, or every time I speak with her on the phone, and the thing is, it ain't gonna change. My mother is 82. She's not going to change. But I can drop the expectation that she should, because she just isn't the mother that I have a fantasy about having. Just like I'm not the daughter she has a fantasy about having. Newsflash. So It's really about recognizing that I had to let go of certain expectations. And that this is my mother who gave me life. And ultimately, she's going to be around for however many more years she is. And I have a choice. I have a choice that I can either get roped into the button pushing every single time, or maybe do it once every four times. And even that will create a little bit of space. So call it survival. That's as good a word as any. But it's that kind of shift that can be immensely liberating, actually. Because you're really not trying to create a fantasy anymore. You're just relating as an adult, as a grown-up, with what is around you.
So similar to that gentleman over there, I too had a family. I don't just have a family. Both of my parents have 10 brothers and sisters, and everybody gets together for Christmas. It ranges from very conservative aunts to very creepy uncles. And I understand that the surviving is, you know, not blowing up every time, but every four times. But when there are so many people around that know how to trigger you or have different beliefs and talk about things just to bother you and don't believe in the path that you're pursuing or the life that you're living, how do you stay grounded in that? Mm. How do you not allow yourself to give in to that negative energy, because it's all encompassing, particularly when you're there with them. I would love to know how to handle Christmas this year.
Yeah, it's quite a crowd.
There's 70 of us.
Well, you know, again, this is not so much about giving a prescriptive approach to specific situations. I would say that when when we can learn to notice and let go a little, it shifts the way we relate to it. And they don't need to be on your path or believe what you believe. It's really not about that. And also, you know, again, part of the mindfulness practice is about also understanding what is, you know, why am I being triggered? What is really going on for me? Because that's really where the energy kind of flares up.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Yeah, it's if my mother says something that upsets me, I need to understand what is it about that inside of me. What is the chain of thoughts and feelings and assumptions and expectations and, you know, that mind noise that causes me to have an extreme reaction? And it's a difference between having that extreme reaction and, you know, as in the buttons being pushed, versus noticing that, you know, when Uncle Joe says, or when my mother says, it's, you know, it's sad, it saddens me, it hurts me, but there you have it. So that's what I mean by understanding where is that sort of flare of energy coming from.
She's not making you upset. You're making yourself upset.
What is coming up? Exactly. Exactly. So.
Sorry. Yeah. Want me to repeat that?
Yeah.
I just. She can't make you do anything. She can't make you upset. You're the one who's getting upset. Yeah. So you realize what makes you
right.
flare up.
And also, being upset is also, you know, having, you know, we have the sense that certain, that there are good feelings and bad feelings. And we all like to experience good feelings, right? and so interactions that cause what we call less pleasant feelings to arise, we don't want to be around. And so that's part of the challenge, is how we relate to that. Now, with family situations, sometimes it's not desirable nor possible, or maybe it is, but that's part of the decision, to simply say, you know what? I ain't coming this year because I just can't cope. I mean, it's a choice, but we also have the reality that this is our family, right? So being also, so a combination of understanding what our own patterns and our own constant assumptions and noise, but also understanding that it's not always going to be comfortable. You know, I know that there are certain situations with my family that are not going to be, you know, pleasant. It's not what I would choose to have if this were not my family. But there you have it. That's the family I have. And in a sense, there is also another level of bonding that comes from that being my family. So that's what I mean by also the fact that mindfulness is about being able to stay with things that are not necessarily how we want them, because we can't always change them, and we can't always make ourselves simply love them either in the way that we think of loving something. And the good news is that it's usually only a few days of the year. So if it's, you know, and but you might find that also when you start relating to it a little differently, your experience shifts. Could be. So it's part of this also, this other notion that things are dynamic, they're not fixed, they're not always like this, like we see them. I'm conscious that it's 8:36 and Joy and Susie might be giving me the sign soon. So I would like to thank you for your participation. And I'd like to also wish you very wonderful holidays, whatever that might mean for you. And, you know, there is always, even when things may seem to be not what we want them to be, there might be something really special that comes up. And vice versa, even the most wonderful planned situations may not always bring what we expect anyway. So be open to the experience. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Philomena. Oh, yeah, we can do this. Holidays. We got this. Visit our website, ny.chambala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. If you happen to live not in New York City, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come to our weekly Dharma gathering. It's every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. You can hear these talks live and in person. Meet the teachers, meet the other students, enjoy some snacks. It's a good time. Email us at podcast@chimbalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions, jokes, strategies for the holidays. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Later.